Welcome everyone to the room today. Salam Shakti and Eunice. Of course, Maitreya is with us here today. We see his name there in the list. And our setup here in this particular session is that we open any general questions to the room. And what we'd like to do is pose a question. And Lou actually has one that we're going to start off with, but other questions will be welcome. And we'll pose the question, and Maitreya will answer this one. But then any other question, pose it, and then we'll all discuss it and talk about it and see how we would answer that question. It could be a difficult question that you've heard here in Pal Talk, or it could be a difficult question that someone has asked you about the teaching that you did not quite know how to answer it, and maybe would like to hear another way that someone else might answer that question. So today we're going to start off with Lou's question. I'm going to post it here in the text area. It's got a couple of verses behind it to substantiate the question. So that's the first one. And here's the second verse. And here's the question from Lou. From Genesis 15, verse 13. And he said unto Abram, Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And from Exodus 12:40, Now in the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. So the question from Lou is, you ask us to distinguish between Abram and Abraham. Why then did the seed of Abraham become a stranger in the land of Egypt and not the seed of Abram? Seed of Abraham, children of Israel. Seed of Abram, Ishmaelites or the Arabs. And we'll release the mic.
Salam everyone. The question is about the suffering of the Israelites or the children of Abram or Abraham. Which one were the 400 years of suffering that they will endure? If you notice, the verse that has been quoted here is 15:13. If you have your Bible, if you look at that verse, God hasn't changed the name of Abram to Abraham yet. Therefore, he is telling Abram what is going to happen to his children, which, of course, Abram had Ishmael first and Isaac later. It's just like my name was Muhammad, and God would come to me and say, I'm going to have a child by the name of Isaac. How he would have addressed me. He would have told me, Muhammad, you're going to have a son called Isaac, but really the son I had, my name was Joseph by then. But I didn't know that, and Abraham didn't know that. God knew that, but he is talking to Abraham at this time. So really, in this time, he's saying something is going to happen to Abraham, but he's not revealing to him that his name is going to be Abraham. He hasn't even been having concubined to have Ishmael yet. And in chapter 17 in verse 5 is the first time that God says, Neither shall thy name be any more Abram but Abraham. And from then on, of course, God calls him Abraham. Therefore, from then on, he no longer is called Abram but Abraham. So again, our teaching stands correct, because before that he was called Abram, and therefore God was addressing him as Abram. And after he changed the name, of course, he became Abraham. And also in Exodus, as you see, it says now the suffering of the children of the Israel. It doesn't say the children of Ishmael. So in that verse in chapter 15 of Genesis, most probably God was referring to the children of Israel, not the children of Ishmael. Also, it's possible that children of Ishmael also went through a period of suffering because we really don't know what happened to them. Ishmael goes in the desert with his mother, and he is saved by a well that they found. So a mother and a son, and then he married somebody, and they probably struggled for a long time before they became a nation. But of course, the Bible is very silent about what happened to Ishmael from then on until later on they become a great nation, you know, by God. So it might have also been referring to Ishmael. They went through the struggle for the same period of time that the children of Israel went through. So we have to go and study the history and probably find out more about the Ishmaelites, what happened to them after they went to the well and continue their life until they became a great nation. It is not inconceivable that it would take 400 years before they eventually become a great nation from one man with 12 children, 12 sons. So again, that's a possibility that also God was talking about Ishmael, who will go through a period of a struggle for the same period of time. Either way, it does not affect our teachings that his name was Abram, and the child of Abram is Ishmael, and he changed his name to Abraham, the father of many nations, and the child of Abraham, of course, is Isaac, and the rest of the Bible concentrate on Isaac and his children. The only thing we hear later is Arabs become great nations, and then a prophet come from them, which has been promised to come from also Ishmael. I hope that answered your question. If you have a follow-up, go ahead. Otherwise, we continue with our room and the program in it.
Okay, I see Lou is saying that that is fine, that he does not have a follow-up. Thanks God for that answer, that clarification. Welcome to the room, Ellis. We hope you go to the website and see how all religions are part of the eternal divine path, and that's our topic today. Great. We'd like to open the room now to any general questions that anyone would like to post up first before we go to our list of questions. Don't be shy. Just go ahead and speak up or type in text. That's fine. And we can all brainstorm it and see what we can come up with.
Salam, everyone. I am Radha here. I have a question. I was reading about dogmas on Maitreya.org. There is a verse that says any religion, ideology, etc., which divides people will be known as dogmas and will not be supported. But in Luke chapter 12, verses 49 to 53, Jesus said that he came to divide.
Just so everyone can be thinking about it, I'm going to read Luke 12, 49 through 53 to support that question. So starting with verse 49, it says, "And I come to send fire on the earth, and what will I if it be already kindled? But I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how am I straitened till it be accomplished? Suppose ye that I am come to give peace on earth? I tell you nay, but rather division. For from henceforth there shall be five in one house divided, three against two, and two against three. The father shall be divided against the son, and the son against the father, and the mother against the daughter, and the daughter against the mother. The mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." That was 53. So, how would we answer someone who asked that question about dogmas and division?
Here's the way I would answer it. Isa is bringing a new teaching to humanity, the opening of the third seal. And he was taking people and dividing them to to the Father, bringing them back to the Father. He wasn't dividing them from the Father. I hope that's clear. That's it.
Yes, it's Radha. I think that the division between one family is that means that one person in the family will understand the message, and one, the other, the brother or the sister, will not. So there will be division because one will understand and the other will not, that's the division will be from there, I think.
Well, another way, too, to look at that word from the teaching standpoint is everything can be of three kinds. There can be division from knowledge or from passion or from ignorance. Ignorance would be the dogmas that divide man. But if there's a division in the level of knowledge, then this is what God is doing right now. This is the time of sundering, which is the separating of the wheat and the chaff. So that's been prophesied and predicted. So then there's a division known from that angle too. I'm not sure it still addressed the idea that he's talking about with dogmas. Actually, it does, come to think about it. Dogma in that level of knowledge can be a truth too. So we have to just say what level that we're working with here, knowledge, passion, or ignorance.
Anyone else?
There was one thing I was thinking, that it could also be dividing from the lower self to the higher self.
Can you explain further? That was too masterful.
Well, from the lower self, meaning the lower chakras and the things that are the Maya in the world, which pulls us down and away from our true self, and overcoming and being baptized in the spirit, going to the higher self and following the path to God, following the eternal divine path.
Great. Okay. Anyone else? The question is, Christ said he has come to divide. We say we have come to unify. At the same time, we say it is the time of sundering. How do they two go together? We unify and sunder at the same time? How is that possible? That's the question. I suppose no one else is there to take the challenge. I think there were good answers there. Some of them were very simple, right to the point, and some of them were more complicated. And probably the person asking the question have to be in a very high level to decipher the meaning that has been presented to them. We have many different people come to our room, so that's okay. The teaching surely has unified our religions. And I'm sure those who followed Christ and became Christian at that time, they became unified, they became community. Therefore, he did unify them together as Christians. And eventually, many, many millions of billions of people unified under Christian banner. Or the cross. But at the same time, as we see in our teaching, in the families that they see the vision, many of them have a problem among themselves. The father against the child, the mother against the daughter, the husband against wife, and the wife against the husband. Those we can see that see the vision, but their family and spouse and people around them don't. Even me, myself, when I received the revelation and I said to my family that I'm gonna do this, everybody dropped me like a led. Have I brought unity even among my family? No. There was a division even between me and them. That is the division Christ is talking about here. Although he will unify those who are Christians, at least in the beginning, many will oppose him, and they oppose their children, their family, and it happened in every new revelation that came to humanity. There were people even at the time of Prophet Muhammad who joined him and went to the Mecca with him, and they had war, and the other side was their father. So they had actually fight and have war against each other. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is fighting with people that are family of Arjuna. And Arjuna is faint-hearted and falls down and say, I can't do that. These are all my uncles, my brothers, my family. I can't fight them. And Krishna comes in and say, no, you have to. It's a new wine and in a new skin, and you have to continue teaching them, continue try to help them, to bring them to see the vision, change their heart. So we can see that division is different than the unity Krishna brought to his camp with Arjuna. Yeah, Arjuna and his army were united under Krishna's teachings and abilities and revelations, but at the same time the other people were against them, therefore they had to have a war. So Christ is talking about the same thing. The new teaching unifies, at the same time it sunders. Those who see the vision unify together and bring new teaching and revelation to humanity. Those who don't, they probably will not be incarnated for a long time, especially in this last revelation to humanity. I hope that answers the question. If you have a follow-up, go ahead.
Treya, we lost part of that last answer.
Okay, can you hear me now? Okay. Apparently we have some technical difficulties here, and we have to go out and completely go out of Paltalk and back. Still, there was lag when Shirin was talking. I don't know how much you didn't hear. Basically, the answer was that Christ came, those who went under his banner and teachings were unified. Those who opposed it were sundered. It has happened in every new revelation. It happened to Muhammad. It happened to Krishna. The whole epic of the Bhagavad Gita is about he unified Arjuna and his people under his banner, and his family, Arjuna's family, were against them. So they were sundered. That's true also for this mission. We have experienced the same. Those who see this vision and come to the mission, they are unified under these teachings. And those who oppose it, including the family, spouse, mother, father, sons, all kind of people who oppose them, of course, kind of a sundered, and that is basically the answer to the question that when Christ is talking about he has come to divide, he has not come to divide his own people who follow him, but those who do not follow him. That was the gist of it. I hope that answered the question.
We just posted it there in text again. Or Elias, did you have a follow-up with your question? That would be fine. Please feel free. Doing a mic test. We're assuming that's unification typing. I'm not sure, because the name is not showing up on our screens. Okay, there we go.
Okay, we had some technical problem here with our connection to internet. Hopefully it is resolved, we're not sure, but we did what we could do from here. If somebody update us what is going on in the room.
Ilias had a question, or a comment rather, and I just posted it there in text. Mm-hmm. And we asked him if he had a follow-up, and it looks like maybe he does. Ilias, if you'd like to type it, that'd be fine too.
Okay, what was the answer to that question?
We talked about how God furthered his plan by the coming of each prophet, and that each prophet had a part of one plan to reveal, and that each prophet did in his own way say that he finished his mission, but that there would be seven sections or seven seals that would reveal all of God's message, and in the seventh seal all would be totally revealed. So not only did God reinforce his message with the new prophets, but the message evolved itself and now is fully revealed in the seventh seal. But that each of the prophets did not come and say the same thing.
Yeah, the question sounds like a Baha'i kind of a understanding that there's going to be prophets coming forever to bring new revelations, but that is not the case. The case is that there was a plan that there will be seven seal and revelation, and as you explained, eventually it's going to stop. That plan is eventually the elects are going to be enough to come together and create the kingdom, at least for 1,000 years. So that teaching, although has some truth, is not completely correct. So the answer you guys gave was correct. Okay, now if there any follow-up. Well, he's asking if there was another views. There were a couple of our group, members in our group who came. The answer to that question was given with a couple of people, and eventually the answer was given as Christ comes to unify those who understand the vision under his banner, but those who are unified are opposed with other people and they divide. So Christ doesn't divide. Christ brings a new revelation and people divide themselves against him. So he is a unifier, but people who do not see the vision divide themselves. And that's what he was talking about in that verse. Go ahead, sponsor. Sounds like you had your hands up.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, God. What I learned in Christianity about Jesus came, Jesus said that he came to divide his divide from darkness to light. That's what I understand about that verse. I don't know if there is another meaning. Maybe there is more than one meaning for each verse.
No, it is the same meaning. The people who do not see the vision, they haven't been meditating for 12,000 years. They have not progressed. They not open to new revelations and new teachings, and therefore they are in darkness. They are still hanging into their dogmas and religions and believing what they have is the last one. Therefore, they will not go to the new revelation. God says there's going to be seven. They said, no, but we have one part of it and we have all the truth. And that's what they cannot explain everything, but we can. That's why the light on the earth really is this revelation, and those who do not join it, they are in darkness. So, again, it's the same thing. The Christ unifies by his teaching, by new revelation, but those who are in the darkness does not accept it. They want to stand in darkness, therefore they sunder themselves from God. Again, it goes to the free will. If they had not exercised their free will, to go away from God, we wouldn't have all this darkness and creation and the teaching and revelation and the prophets and the struggle and the history. All these things are to teach humanity there is a purpose in life, there is a reason for this creation, and the purpose is to follow the eternal divine path, reach pure consciousness, and become divine. So this is the light. Those who join this light, they become unified under the light. Those who don't, they exercise their free will to stay in darkness. It's simple as that, and that is what Christ is talking about here. I hope all this made sense. If you have a follow-up, go ahead. Otherwise, we continue to the next question.
The next question asked was, people say the universe is perfect, yet the mission teaches it is not. How can we explain this?
This is like a pop quiz from yesterday. Great. If anybody goes to our website, you see a lot about perfect and pure consciousness and so forth. And a lot of people go around and say, well, the universe is perfect. And we accept that as some kind of truth. But the mission says, no, the universe, creation, is not perfect. It has decay. It has deterioration. It is not permanent. It is not the ultimate. So it cannot be perfect. The perfect, we talked about this yesterday too, perfect is beyond these kinds of things. So the universe is not a permanent experience. It's not the ultimate experience. The ultimate experience would be to become in His image again and to reach pure consciousness. So that's one way to look at it about how the universe is not perfect.
So the question is, some people come and say, well, everything is perfect. You don't have to do anything. We are already perfect. We are already God. We don't need eternal divine path. We don't need the Messiah. We don't need the scriptures. Is that true? If that's true, then what are we doing here? That's the question. Anybody have an answer? Why we are here doing this, and which one is correct?
God has prophesied that the seventh angel will come and reveal this truth.
So one answer is nobody knows the truth until the seventh angel comes. So anybody who come and say, I know the truth before that, they can't be correct. That's a good answer.
I also would like to say, if that was the case, if everything was perfect, and if there were no need for this manifestation, and if God could bring everything back to perfectness right there, then He would not create this creation and this process. If we didn't need this process, if we didn't need to meditate and improve ourselves and go back to light, He would just do it right there then.
So true. And we also discussed yesterday, if you are perfect, you won't be in your body. You wouldn't be in manifestation. How can then this be perfect? And also those who come here and say everything is perfect and I'm God, if you go and study their life, you see they have a lot of problem with their lives and how to handle their situations. If you are perfect, how you can have a problem? If it's perfect, why is it decay? If it's perfect, why the karma is created? It's perfect. Perfection doesn't have karma. Anybody else wants to take the mic? Go ahead. Otherwise, I'll come back and we wrap that question up. Okay, I think the answers were pretty much answered the question. This creation is a relative truth. Anything is relative, is not perfect, cannot be perfect, because it's not absolute. And since it's not absolute, it has suffering in it, it has karma, it has failing of the self to lower nature, and the very existence of the lower nature means it's not perfect. And humanity has been struggling to get to this point, and now, of course, we can see that God has sent this revelation, and even in this revelation it says it's not perfect, and we have to go to perfection, which is the Godhead, is the absolute, is the essence. Therefore, the answer to their question is no. This universe is not perfect, and all the evidence is there that this creation is in flux. It is kept with force together, and if that force is taken away, everything is going to dissolve to pure consciousness and darkness. And when that time comes and the universe dissolves back to its origin, those who have not made it to the light will stay in the darkness, and as Christ said, there's going to be gnashing of the teeth, and that's a very nice place for billions of years. So those who say this universe is perfect, they really don't understand the truth of the creation and why we're here. Eunice, sound like you raised your hand. Go ahead if you have a question.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to ask, maybe we could say, will this be true if we say the laws, how the universe works, like how it is set up by God, is perfect? Could we say in that sense the universe is perfect, how the process is working and how the laws are working?
Absolute, that's absolutely the truth. God made this universe perfect in a sense it will guide us to go to pure consciousness. That is true, because God is perfect. He doesn't create something is not perfect. That's why the scientists can explain it. It's explainable, it's logical. You know, and the scientists, they think, oh, I find this. No, you didn't find that. God has already created that. It's perfect the way it is. If they realize it's not them who find the things, it's already been there, then they realize how logical and perfect it is. You're absolutely correct. This universe created perfect to guide us to go back to essence. But creation itself is not perfect because it is a relative truth. Okay, I just was informed there was another question. Maccom 2 is asking, does bloodline of chosen ones come from women or men? It should really come from both. It's two bloods. It's not one blood. It genetically was affected with both man and woman. Therefore, doesn't matter which one you are from, both of them contributing into the genealogy of the person. I hope that answered your question. I might add to that, because the father usually was more dominating in many cultures, that was chosen as the person who was considered as the bloodline. Also, since they have many children from more than one wife, it would have been a little difficult to say, I am from this father and this mother, so they connected the person to a father, so everybody was from the one father. So they would have been closer as a brothers and sisters. So traditionally, it's eventually evolved to, okay, I'm from this father, and he was from that father, and that was from that father. So you can explain it also that way. Eventually, it evolved that the father became more prominent than mother. And also those societies were patriotic, so the father usually was considered more than the mother in bloodline. But in truth and reality, mother contributes to the child as much as the father does. Hope that answered your question. Okay, if there is no other questions or nobody has anything to add, we can go to the next question now.
What does leave them to God really mean? This was heard in Paul talk.
Question is, we leave them to God. Many times I have said if people come here and we give them the vision, then if they did not come and join us, we leave them to God. What does that mean?
To me, it goes back to that previous discussion that we've had about the sundering and the separations and the divisions, that God is the judge. So if people refuse or reject, that we leave them to God to be the judge of what their situation is going to be, whether they go to that outer darkness or they can hang on to the path and go to what the goal is. So we leave them to God to be the judge.
Also, God is the doer. We let go. We surrender and submit to God. We leave the results to Him.
Great answers. Very great answers. Or when we say we leave them to God, it really says it's between them and God now. We just wash our hand and say, we gave the message, we leave them to God. It's between God and them. As Tahereh said, we are not the doer, we are just here to give the message. And whatever happened, affect them, see the vision, we don't know. As Christ said, it's the same thing, you throw the seed, some of them falls in a very fertile soil and give 100% fruit. And some 70, 50, 30, 20, and some of them none. Sometimes we work in one person or a group of people, and you see no manifestation, and suddenly somebody send an email and says, well, I put the greatest sign at the top of the earth, and I'm going to make the greatest sign even a greater degree, or I will read this or do that for the mission, or translate this to this language, and I'll do this and that. And also other people that may manifest every day for the mission. We didn't really push them to do those things. The vision fell in the right soil. They saw the vision. It is their vision now. It is their religion. It's between them and God. They saw the vision. They want to help, and they do things they want to do, and we say, thanks God. So we leave them to God too. But they, of course, manifest, and other people will leave to God, and the word comes, and the Maya comes, and catch them, and pull them down to the lower nature, and they manifest nothing, or even lose the vision. So it's very simple mission for everybody. We do our best, but leave them to God. Those who manifest, their reward is with God. Those who do not manifest, their reward is with God. So it's what that means. Leave them to God. We are not attached to the result. They have already answered the question. So I just let it go. If somebody wants to add something, go ahead. Otherwise, we continue the room.
Salam, it's Tahereh again. There was a question asked. I was talking about the Messiah on earth, and the person told me that the temple in Jerusalem is not yet built, and he cannot be here now. How can we answer something to that?
Okay, how can we answer such a question? Somebody comes and we tell them about the mission. Said, no, it can't be that. Jerusalem doesn't have the temple. It has a mosque. It has to be destroyed and we build a temple over it. Then the Messiah will come. How can we answer that question?
The first thing that jumps in my mind is that that's old Jerusalem. It's very clearly stated that the temple would be built in New Jerusalem, and that's here in Rio Rancho.
Well, good answer. Anyone else?
Well, sorry, I missed the question. I lost the connection.
Okay, somebody wants to read the question again?
I was talking about the Messiah on earth, and the person told me that the temple in Jerusalem is not yet built, and he cannot be here now. How can we answer something to that? I can try an answer. I don't think that is a prophecy that the temple has to be built in Jerusalem. It is not in. I don't know where the person took this assertion, but I don't think it is a prophecy that we can trust, maybe.
The person who said that is either a Jew or a Christian that believed that a temple should be built in Jerusalem and the Messiah will come into that temple. And that means creating the same temple that Solomon built in Jerusalem, and that is the belief that he's been with the Jewish people for more than 2,000, 3,000 years. That is what he's talking about. It's the same thing as Muhammad is the last prophet and no other prophet is going to come. Or we have the last word, or we are the chosen one. We call those things what? Dogmas. Well, I give half an answer, so... Anybody want to take from there, go ahead. Actually, both answers given with Radha and Shirin are pretty much correct.
Just thinking out loud, if someone really, really wanted the understanding of the temple, and they only want to, again, concentrate on their temple, like you're saying, then, again, they've only got a part of the truth. But if the temple is a central thing that they're really interested in, when they could see the temple as it's built for all the seals, then they could see the temple as God designed it. And then that would make so much more sense to them. And then maybe all the other factors could come into play also, the New Jerusalem versus the Old Jerusalem that's got so much blood on its hands and so forth. And it's the New Jerusalem that can handle, that will manifest the new teaching, and that's where the Messiah is.
Well, that's why we started the project of New Jerusalem. As we said, if so many people come and join, and we can buy a land in Rio Rancho, I don't think any land for 200 acres anymore left. They're all bought up, and the price is skyrocketing here. So we could have probably buy 200 acres for $10 million at that time that I proposed. But I don't think you can do that anywhere. Probably the same kind of land is 50 million or even more at this time. Actually, a hospital here bought 15 acres for $50 million. So absolutely, we need to create the New Jerusalem, build the temple. Then it become a center for reevaluating themselves. As God never said, it's going to be in Jerusalem. It's going to be a new Jerusalem. And the old Jerusalem is truly have worn and finished its usefulness. And now we have to look where the new Jerusalem is. Actually, there was an article in Times that compared Albuquerque and Rio Rancho to Jerusalem, the way the sun comes up and the way the buildings in the other side, in the east side, reflects the sun to the west in the sunset, and the buildings was building it and all that, and the weather, and even it's in the same altitude as Jerusalem. If you follow the altitude of the Albuquerque and Rio Rancho, goes right to Jerusalem. So we can see God given all the signs. Here this is the place also the children of Israel meet the children of Ishmael. So there's all the sign. It says we need a new place. We need New Jerusalem. And I am very open for the people to come to join so we can have the New Jerusalem built. It's supposed to be 1 mile by 1 mile in radius. And then we can create the center in that place and build the temple and the university and dormitories and the welcoming center and create an environment that a lot of people can come, read the teaching, see the vision, understand. Now the temple is built and the teaching of the seven angel indeed is here. So we are aware of the prophecies, but that prophecy is not for Jerusalem. They are spending their time, energy, efforts, wars, destruction, political maneuvering, and the desire in a place, again, that is not from God. God said differently. So we can again see humanity is so lost. And we have the answer for them because God gave the answer and he said he will give it in this time. So the answer to the question is very simple. It is not the Jerusalem, but it is the new Jerusalem. Of course, at this time we are the thief of the night and we have come very hidden. Maybe that's what they mean in Islam, hidden imam. It goes the same as being the thief of the night. We are hidden. And now is not the time. You know, we don't have enough people. We can see right now with fantastic revelation, we have only a few people in this room, and even the people who joined us, it just went right through their over their head. They couldn't even fathom the depth of these teachings, which is okay. But we have to be consistent and completely dedicate ourselves to reach in any way we can and any way we help. But we need people that can come and put their efforts and their material blessings into buying the New Jerusalem. Or we can wait until our member increases, until the whole city of Rio Rancho become the New Jerusalem, as the motto in this city is the city of vision. We didn't even choose that name. Somebody else did, and the city is called the city of vision. Most of the people even don't know what it is, the city of vision, but it is. So answer to that question simply is the New Jerusalem. It is in the process of being created, and we are all a part of it. And we have to be dedicated and recognize that anything we can do to manifest it. Okay. If there's any question about the answer or follow-up, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say two things. Then maybe we could say until the temple is built in New Jerusalem, maybe the mission will not be outreaching in greater sense. And also, would this be true? Has a symbolic meaning also, like until one person builds the temple in his body, the Christ does not come. What could this be like until you reach the seventh chakra or to pure consciousness, Christ does not come? Could we look at it that way also?
Very good. Again, absolutely, you are correct. As Christ said, the temple is your body. Therefore, when you build the temple and purified it, then you will see the vision and Christ. Of course, we also believe whatever is above, so is below. So, also there are symbolic meaning of the temple as a building, as a place that people can go meditate and recognize the temple of the body. And that has been given in the mission as the temple, and the way to create it, to build it, and therefore it's also available for humanity. So both way of looking at it is correct. It's a temple as a building, and it's also a temple of body, and both of them go hand in hand. By building the temple, you have a place to meditate. By meditating, you purify your body. By purifying your body, you respect the temple and build the temple in a greater degree of purity and beauty. And eventually, both of them hand in hand help you to follow eternal divine path. You are correct.
Just as a side note, too, it's not really in the teachings about doing this, but we can look at it symbolically. In Genesis, God created in the ethereal state first. And even right now, the temple is being built in that virtual state. We have the temple being constructed closely in Second Life. So it's kind of in that ethereal virtual world being created right now.
Yeah, very good, very good. Absolutely. Yeah, actually, the temple is already built in ethereal level. God's vision of the temple has been given to us, but in ethereal level, for him, the temple is already decided will be built. So in ethereal level, we have the temple. The New Jerusalem is already built in the ethereal level, so we have that way. And as you said, in the Second Life, we do have that also that is being built and created. So the temple is built, and the temple is not Christ's body, a sponsor says. Yeah, that you can say that too, that probably that is also built now. It has all the signs in it. It has the place of the nails and here my body. Some people say my ear has been prophesied to come the way it is. So you can see so many ways you can look at this question, that you can expand that person who asks this question to recognize that it is their dogma. It is their understanding. It's not God's understanding. God is much more expanded. And we just saw how many people came with a different answer, which they were all correct. So tell them, forget about dogma. Go to the website, read the new teaching, understand the deeper meaning of the temple, New Jerusalem. Your body is the temple and all that. And actually, in a sense, you say, if this person was Jewish person, their Christ came as the form of Christ and he told them where the temple is, and they missed it. Then Muslim came, and Prophet Muhammad created mosque, and they didn't accept that one in the Christendom. So we can see humanity have to be educated, have to go through this tribulation. Unfortunately, they are not ready to see this vision, but that's okay. We are the hidden imam. We are the thief of the night. But you are my hands, ears, eyes out there to take this vision to every corner on earth and manifest it. Great question, great answers.
What is the difference before Isa came to earth and after his coming as Isa the Christ, keeping in mind that he releases the grace to humanity?
I guess the question is, Christ came, released the grace. What else happened?
Well, he also came to teach about sacrifice, and he also came to gather the people under one banner. He had a threefold mission, and to release the grace to humanity.
That is true. That is true. That is the threefold of the missions of the Christ. Now, what else happened? But there is more, though, than three. Anybody remembers what else happened after he came?
Well, he came to fulfill the prophecy.
Okay, that's a good one. Yeah, there were some prophecies for him to come. If he hadn't come and fulfilled them, we would be in trouble. So he fulfilled the prophecies. What else did he do? Okay, says we did not have to till the ground any longer. You mean after Christ gave, we had dishwasher and refrigerator. He will stop growing things on the ground. Use the tractor and all that to do those things.
No, what I understood for that to mean that when humanity fell away from the oneness with God, they lost the grace, and that grace is that oneness. So God sent them to the manifested universe to go till the ground. It's like, okay, if you don't want it the easy way, you get it the hard way. So when Christ came, they had progressed to the point of overcoming that lower nature so that it symbolically did not have to till the ground. That grace was back, and it seems to me like from that fourth chakra up, it would then be an easier way to go to God and not have to suffer so hard in those first three chakras once that crossing over line, that baptism line from the lower nature to the higher nature, like Tahara was saying, is crossed. So we would not have to suffer so hard in that sweat of the brow kind of tilling the ground thing. Is that close?
You can say the people who became Christian, they received the grace, and therefore they received the fattest part of the earth, and their life was much easier, and they were graced greatly because of the grace of the Christ. And even in Quran it says that God will prefer or give more to the people who follow Isa to the end time. And now this is the end time. This is the time that grace not is released to every part of the earth, and those who follow eternal divine path will receive the grace. So you can say yes, in that sense, those who became Christian, they received the grace of Christ. And therefore, that's one of the things he did. That's a good one. Okay, if you meant that, yeah, that is correct. He didn't release the grace to everyone at that time. It is now that the grace has been released to everyone. And also we can see it is in this time that human less and less till the ground. They don't need shovels anymore. Even snow, they don't have to shovel snow. They have a machine that can do that for them, or they can use machines that till the ground for them easily. So we can see it is this time that the grace have come to lift up humanity from the curse of the tilling the ground. Okay, any follow-up, any question, any addition to that?
Question will be what is the difference with or without the grace? Before the Christ, without, and after the Christ came, you release the grace, or with grace? That is my question.
Okay, without the grace, salvation is impossible. Without the grace, we will suffer, we will till the ground. And another thing Christ finished was the sacrifice of animals, of a lot of rituals that Moses brought to the children of Israel and humanity. We don't have to do those things anymore. And before him, the grace was taken away from all humanity. And after him, the grace was given to Christian. And it shows, if grace is there, people don't have to suffer as much as they did before. Who suffers more, European and Americans, or people in Africa and other places that don't have enough material thing to support them? It's not because of what the European or American did. It's because God's grace was with them. He withdraw the grace, it's going to be famine, it's going to be destruction, it's going to be everything that other people don't have or have. So it is that the West have to recognize. It is because of the God's grace that they have received such a blessings. That is the difference. If you have the grace, you will have great lands, your lands will give great fruits, and your life going to be more comfortable. But with this revelation, after grace is released to humanity, they have to recognize this is the grace of God and use their blessings to have more time to meditate, to create a community of light, to create an environment that accelerates everybody else and themselves to go to God as fast as possible, instead of saying, oh, we made it, it is ours, we don't have to listen to God, put God out of everything in our life and go do adultery, fornication, this and that, and put God out of everything. No, that is the message now, mission is to humanity and the West. It was God's blessing. Now it has been released to everyone. So, wake up. The only way West can really manifest itself and its greatness again, by recognizing our teaching, come to it, and bring everybody else to it. So that is the difference. The grace brings greater prosperity, greater life, has to be used to progress toward God. And also, Moses, the scripture shall not depart from Judah, nor law-giving from the between the until the shallow comes and until he's, okay, that's a good one. Okay, that means also he finished the mission for the children of Israel as the chosen people to create the communities and set up example as the community of light, a community which bases on God and his law. That's a good one. He finished that. He finished the sacrifice. He brought the grace. But the most important was the threefold mission that Shirin mentioned at the very beginning. And therefore, he has great effect on history. And now we will have even greater effect by bringing the whole humanity under one banner with God's grace and understanding of history and creation, and realizing that there is a goal in life, and we have to create a society, an earth, that's geared toward that goal. Salam, everyone. Again, have a good day. We will have a gathering tonight at 8 o'clock, I think. 8, yeah. we invite everybody to come back, and hopefully it's going to be very informal and just get together. This is the first time we are doing this. See what happened tonight. Salam, everyone.